Do you struggle with all things you need to run your photography business on the day-to-day? You're not alone, and you're in the right place. You're listening to Focal Points. We're an EndPhoto podcast hosted by Dori Howell, and we are here to help you create a business that you love. I'm so excited today because we have Betsy Bird with us. And Betsy is an equine photographer based out of Chattanooga, Tennessee. And she has so many just little bits of information that she's going to share with us today that I think will really help you guys as you strive with better time management and managing your businesses when sometimes things come up that you can't control. So Betsy, I'm so glad that you are here with us today. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get started into kind of our topic or topics of the day, can you maybe introduce yourself to our audience, let them know a little bit about yourself, how you got started in photography, and how you landed on horses? Where let's just dive right in there.
Well, honestly, I grew up on a small horse boarding farm out in just outside of Athens, Georgia. So I've been around horses basically my whole life. And my mother is a horse girl. Okay. And it still to this day is. She still lives on our family farm. And the photography side of things actually came from my dad. He was an amateur photographer kind of his whole life. And then as he retired from his career, he sort of took it up and became sort of a semi-pro. Mm-hmm. Photography was sort of how we connected. And we would spend a lot of time arguing over layers and sort of things. And so that was particularly later in life when he passed away of cancer a few years back. And when he was ill and everything, I would drive him out into a field with his camera so he could take pictures of birds and wildlife and that sort of stuff. And so that was how we kind of connected. That's and everything. Lovely. So for me, it was sort of a combination of my two parents.
All right. So you obviously started this pretty young when, you know, when you're dealing with your dad and that type of thing, I would assume. Or is this something that you, it was a little bit later and you found a way to connect in that way?
It was actually, well, I mean, we always kind of talked about photography and stuff, but I didn't really get into it until my daughter came along. When she was born, she was basically born with reins in her hands. She never played with dolls. She always played with horses. I mean, she just never, I mean, she played with stuffed horses like they were dolls. And then she went and started riding. And of course I started taking photos of her when she was riding and it sort of expanded from there. Like what started off just being a mom taking some pictures of her daughter at a horse show sort of became her daughter and her friends. And then it just kind of snowballed.
I understand. Now, I remember when I was growing up, they had those really, like the horses, they had some that were just horse line toys, but then they had some horses that were accessories to like the Barbies and that kind of stuff. And I never, like, I think I might've had one horse, but horses were never something that really, they didn't catch on with me, but I know with some people, it is just obsessive and it's something that follows them through their whole life, whether they started out young and then they're a teenager, then they're a young adult. And then as an adult, they're doing the same thing with their daughters. They're trying to figure out how to finance all these things. Cause we all know horses are not cheap. whether you lease one or whether you own one or whatever it is one of the more expensive hobbies. And so supporting all that is a challenge. Now, tell me a little bit about how you've had to really dive into and create some systems and so forth with your time management when it comes to juggling a family. You have twins, teenage twins, right? So that kept you busy as, you know, as they were growing up and then building a business at the same time. I know a lot of people, and I still struggle with the fact that sometimes I just don't know what to do with my time. So do you have any insight on that? Because on the questionnaire that you submitted, and people don't know this, a little behind the scenes about the Focal Points podcast, is every guest that comes on, I have them fill out a questionnaire. And a lot of it comes down to, what do you want to talk about? What is of interest to you that we can bring to the audience? And one thing that caught my eye about Betsy's questionnaire was that she really dug into this whole time management thing. And that's just something that, because I can suffer from that, I wanted to talk about today. So can you share with me a little bit about how you manage your time and some systems that you've put in place to help you with that?
So as you know, I'm a mom of three. I had my twins when my daughter was 3 years old. So very young children altogether. And for me, I was very much a mom who realized that if I didn't talk to adults at some point, I was going to lose my mind. So my background actually is in like advertising and marketing and that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I started a company that worked with startup entrepreneurs in various fields who could not afford like full-time marketing help, so that I could actually do some work that was, you know, communicating with adults. It was fun. So I was doing that for a while, and I was also spending time, you know, with my daughter at horse events and whatnot as she kind of grew a little bit older. And that sort of became a passion project, the Ride the Sky did. And so I was basically running two businesses simultaneously as Ride the Sky kept growing.
And raising three kids.
And raising three kids. Right, and right. My husband at the time, he was working at a job that was very demanding. I mean, he was here locally, but he was very, very busy. Now he travels, and so he's gone for months at a time when he goes with his job. So sometimes we don't see him for 3 or 4 months. Wow. So that was a lot. And then when the kids, particularly my sons, got into middle school, one of my sons was having some health issues, and it turned out to be a rather rare disorder that they couldn't figure out without doing gobs and gobs of testing and going to specialists and all that stuff. He missed 7 months of school in seventh grade. He missed 4 months of school in eighth grade. So he was here all the time, and he was up all night, asleep during the day. We were trying to make sure he had a tutor coming in to keep him on track so he didn't get behind. And then, of course, I had my other son who was going to school on normal hours and stuff like that. So there's several years there that there was like no sleep.
I was going to say, I'm surprised that you can really remember much of that. I think
it was
when it gets
exhausting.
Crazy, you know, and you're not sleeping and you're trying to juggle so many things. You look back on that time. And I don't know if it's our brain's way of protecting us from realizing like, oh yeah, that was rough. We don't want to go back there. But I'm sure there are times in my life when things have been that where I look back and I'm like, did that really happen like that? Like, it just doesn't seem to make sense. So it wouldn't surprise me. Like, it's just a big blur because you're just trying to survive, right?
It is. And, you know, some people, when they hear just how much was going on at the time, because not only did my son have this, my daughter had some health issues that were, we had to go to specialists. We were all over the state, all over down in Atlanta, all kinds of stuff. And trying to get all that sorted out with my husband gone and, you know, my other son just trying to do normal kid stuff, you know, and then my daughter decided she wanted to play competitive volleyball in there and stuff like that, because we should add something else, right?
Why not, right?
So when you have all that going on and stuff, somebody said to me one time, they were like, you know, I don't know how you do it. And I said, well, you know, you're a parent, you're a mom, you know, you just do it and you don't think about it. So you rise up to whatever is required. It's probably why all the hair is gray.
Yeah, you know, it is what it is. Right?
I like to blame it on them, but it's not really them.
I know. I get mine from my mom. But what were some of the things, like, as specific to your business, like, how were you able to, I know one thing that's hard for me, especially running a business, and I'm assuming you were a lot at home running these from home, setting those boundaries in place of what is, especially when you're dealing with the unknowns of a child who needs you and that type of thing, you're interrupted all the time, all those things. What were some of the things that you put in place that could really help you with those boundaries? Or did you, and you just kind of went with it?
Well, I am, you know, like we talked prior to the podcast, I'm probably one of those people who's more type A, you know, in setting up things. I'm also really, really big on task blocking and time blocking because it was the only way I could get things done is to sit down and do stuff. So when the kids were all kind of on their own schedules and everything like that, I really had to figure out what times worked for me to actually get anything done. So like for a few years there, it was 4 to 6 a.m. You know, like that's when I did work because at that time, no one was awake besides me.
Right.
Like I would do that. And then I would, you know, be dealing with kids all morning and stuff. And then between like 3 and 5, things kind of calmed down a little bit or something. And I would do stuff then. And like being able to sort of figure out what times actually things in the household were calm enough, mm-hmm. you know, allowed me to kind of work my schedule to make it so I could at least continue to progress forward, even if I wasn't making leaps and bounds like other businesses were right from the get-go. Mm-hmm. I'm really big on like setting a goal and then breaking it down. So I've always set a goal for like the year mm-hmm. and then I break it down into exactly what I have to do mm-hmm. every week to get mm-hmm. it done. Mm-hmm. And when you do it that way, it's just baby steps, you know, but you're always moving forward. And to me, that's really important. And I have always met my goals that way. Like mm-hmm. being able to say, okay, all I have to do this week is make 2 phone calls. I can do that while a kid's in a doctor's office or something. You know, like if I can't be back there during a test, I can make a phone call or I can type stuff. I mean, you know, it was really beneficial to me that we have become such a mobile society mm-hmm. because, mm-hmm. you know, when I'm in the car driving somewhere, I can make a phone call or I can mm-hmm. sit in the car and, you know, do a Zoom while something else is going on. Mm-hmm. You know, and that has helped immensely with moving my business forward.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing. There's 2 books that come to mind that as you're talking about waking up early. I am not a morning person. I'm like, I'd rather stay up late, all those types of things. But I read 2 books, one I'm in the middle of, and I had to pull it up on my my audiobooks with Amazon. It's called Discipline is Destiny, and it's by Ryan Holiday. And he in this book isn't telling you that you necessarily need to wake up early. He's just telling you like he gives a lot of life examples of people that we know who have found time in those early hours to get things done. Primarily for the reason that you said was that no one else is awake at that time. There's no distractions. There's nothing bothering me. I can hit my list. Now the other really, really popular bestseller book, which I thought was a huge waste of my time, but I'm going to mention it anyway, is the 5 a.m. Club. And it was one of those books where I have so many books. Let me make sure I'm getting this right. I don't want to bash the book so much. It just wasn't necessarily the right fit for me. But the whole concept of the story was this big elaborate story about 2 people who had met a billionaire at some conference and they taught them how to be productive by getting up early. I'm like, I didn't need to listen to 6 hours of this for someone to tell me to get up early. Now, do I get up early? Not all the time, but when I do get up early, I definitely get more done. And so my goal is to become more disciplined in doing that. So it's interesting that you say that that's when you did it out of necessity, right? It was a choice, but it wasn't a choice. You could have certainly not done it.
I would caveat that to say I am an early bird personally. Okay. Now, if you're a night owl, and mm-hmm. you are most productive, and I say this knowing, like, my daughter is the ultimate night owl. Her most productive hours are, like, 1 a.m. to 4 a.m., which is so not me.
You could say is early. You could say is early.
Extra early.
It's extra early.
I mean, but if you're the type of person that, you know, you're best productive at midnight to 2 a.m. Mm-hmm. or whatever, you can do that. I mean, mm-hmm. there's nothing happening usually at that time unless you live in a house full of, you know, young 20-year-olds and teenagers. But, you know, I think you have to pick the time that you personally are most productive and that it works for you. Because, you know, I can sit there and I can tell you that all this stuff is what you need to do. But the fact of the matter is if it doesn't work with your natural body rhythms and it doesn't mm-hmm. work with the way your brain works and all that mm-hmm. stuff, it's not going to work for you.
Yeah. You know? I have found recently that my most productive time is usually between 3 and 7 at night. And I don't understand what that is because I usually have to get a dinner cooked for my family in there. But that's when I come most awake. That's when I'm like really ready to go. Can I do stuff in the morning? Yeah, I can do stuff in the morning. I don't have a problem doing it. Like I said, if I wake up really early and I should say my most productive mornings, if I wake up early, are based on the fact that I've gotten up early and I've started to do something physical. And it's not necessarily a workout. Like my workouts go all different times of day. But like say I really needed to get the mop, like the floor mopped or something. And I start doing that at 7 o'clock in the morning. Well, if I do that, then I realize by 9 o'clock, I've done a lot and it makes me feel good. So I keep that momentum going throughout the day. If I don't start that way, then my most productive time normally is between like that 3 to 7 hour. But unfortunately, that's also the time when I have the most interruptions. So I struggle with that so much, knowing that if I could sit in my office for those 4 hours, I could get the work done of, you know, 3 business days. But the fact of the matter is that's not what my lifestyle allows me to do at this point in time. You know, when we move into a different phase and someone goes away to college and that kind of stuff, it'll be a little bit different. And who knows? I do notice it as I get older. I am getting started earlier, and I never really quite understood why my parents woke up at like the crack of dawn every morning, like my dad, and he went through a phase where he was like that really, really early. And I'm like, that's just got to be old people. Like old people get up really, really early. And as I approach that age, I'm like, oh, yeah,
it is an old person thing.
It is an old person thing because I'm getting old. So,
I mean, my grandmother used to get up at like 4 or 5 in the morning every morning. And I was, I always wondered, you know, when I was a kid, I was like, why are you doing? Right. Like, she's like, you're retired. You're not, you know, having to be somewhere. So like, what do you do? But yeah, she just always got up that early. And I think it's just a phase of life kind of thing. They don't require as much sleep or something.
Yeah. I do think that's part of it. And also, like, when my dad get up early now, I can be like, well, yeah, that's the only time where he had where I wasn't bugging him to death. So, you know.
There's always that, too. Right? I mean, I can picture, like, having to get up, and I don't drink coffee, but, you know, if you're, like, a coffee person and being like, I can have a cup of coffee without toddlers pulling on me and without phone calls and without, you know, chaos going on. I can scroll because I want to scroll.
I can do my death scrolling. It's all good. You know, and I'm not a coffee person either. And some people, like, when they meet me in the early morning, they're like, how much coffee have you had? I'm like, oh, no.
I get that a lot.
This is all me.
Naturally high on life.
That's right. Aren't you lucky? Aren't you lucky? You know, it's one of those things. So one thing we really haven't talked about, we haven't really talked about your photography business yet. We've talked about a few things. So you are the owner of Ride the Sky Equine Photography. And tell me a little bit about what your business specializes in.
Well, I work with, well, obviously, equine portraits, basically. So I do a lot of stuff with high school seniors who want their senior pictures with their horses, horse and rider photos, horses at liberty, you know, running out in a field, that sort of stuff.
Okay. What's a horse and rider portrait? I don't
know. That would just be like a horse and their owner together.
Okay. Like, so just, you know, 2 of them together in a portrait.
Yeah. Celebrating like their bond and that sort of stuff and the connections and stuff they have. I also work with equestrian businesses. You know, like that need brand photography and stuff like that. So basically if it's related to a horse, I usually do it if there's a horse in it.
Do you do any, you say working with businesses and branding and that kind of stuff. Do you do any commercial work? Have you gotten into that too much?
I do some commercial work. Mainly though, I like working with the smaller equestrian businesses that might be like a 1 to 40 person type business, like that smaller side. I like storytelling in my images, which I think that allows you to do a little bit more of that in the branding side than in the commercial side to some extent, at least for what I like to do. I really like to work with my clients and like really develop relationships with them and do a lot of, you know, repeat business with them. I know my clients, I know their horses. I dream about their horses sometimes in the middle of the night and wake up to see, you know, did his abscess heal? Like, is he okay? Is he cold out? Did somebody put a blanket on him? I think about them, you know, like that. So it's the smaller businesses tend to be more of that hand holding process versus where it's handed off to like a marketing manager and that sort of stuff. So,
Now, are you on TikTok?
No, I'm on Instagram and Facebook.
You're on the Instagram. Okay, Facebook. Katie Vance-like owns a farm, and she does a lot of horse breeding. And her channel is very, very interesting. This is the only reason why I know anything really about horses and horse breeding and all this kind of stuff is from her channel, because she posts very regularly about the process.
Her name sounds familiar. Does she have a stallion who's like,
she just bought
a little eye-catching stallion?
She just bought a $1 million stallion called VS Code Red.
Okay. I know who you're talking about.
And she talks about the fact that she, like, what a dream it was for her to buy this stallion. And she has a really popular YouTube channel, really popular a really popular TikTok and all of that kind of stuff. So obviously she's making some money from that too. But it's really interesting because she usually does have a photographer and a videographer with her now. It used to be mostly where she did it herself. And now she has someone with her following her around. And she also does her passion project are miniatures, like miniature cows, miniature donkeys. Like, so she has a whole nother side little farm for these miniatures, which are the miniature cows are literally the cutest thing.
Are they Scottish Highland mini?
Yeah, the Highland ones. So especially when they're babies. Like
they're so cute.
They're so cute. So anyway, her YouTube, I think it's either Running Springs or Katie Van Slyke, S-L-Y-K-E. If anybody's interested in learning a little bit about that, that's where my knowledge about equine has kind of taken a turn. But it's just really interesting to see how her business has grown and her social media has grown because it's marketing for her farm. That's really what she's marketing for. She's marketing for in this, free advertising. When they say no one works for free, what do you think all this social media content is? It's all free marketing for her to breed her really well, I don't know, in the horse world, really well put together horses, you know, to carry on the line. They're not what I am in the human world. They're very exceptionally good.
Excellent confirmation.
Excellent horse specimens, right? This is what you want for horse shows so they can make a lot of money. But it's just been interesting. So that's a total sidebar when it comes to that. So like I said, she is on YouTube as well. And she's very, she explains everything very fully. And she gets a lot of slack sometimes about the treatment of horses when she's not, it's just people who don't understand the farming community and that kind of stuff.
Well, there are some subsets, I guess, that you would say in the equestrian world, just like any animal thing, that do have abusive practices and stuff like that. But I tend to, there are some that I will refuse to photograph because of that.
Because, that's the same of I won't work at the family if a dad starts spanking their kid. I'm like, yeah, we're done. It was in the contract. I'm not sitting around for this. We're not going to do that. Thank you very much. But no. And I'll keep your deposit too.
Here in the Tennessee land, we have Tennessee Walkers, and there was a very big controversy a few years back about soaring horses where they were basically putting acid on their feet and chains and stuff to make them do exaggerated movements, which are not good for the animal. They actually can damage, the animal and how they move in the future and stuff. And that, became a really big controversy and everything. And it's been outlawed now, but, I've had people contact me about photographing them and I will not photograph them because I don't want to promote that.
Right.
That's a good thing to do. I truly believe that all animals need to be loved.
Right. Have you ever gotten any pushback on that? Because I think almost everybody in their business, with photographers especially, when you're releasing artwork that you're not going to have a lot of control over who it's shown to or where it goes. Have you gotten a lot of pushback of saying no? Or have they been like, okay, and then just go to the next one?
Yeah, I have really not, which it's only happened to me a couple times that I've been asked about photographing that particular type of horse. And I wonder if it's just, they've gotten a lot of pushback from asking previous photographers too. And so they know that it's, if you say no, it's just no.
Right.
Cause they didn't really argue about it. Mm-hmm. And I have nothing wrong with Tennessee Walkers in general. My mother has Tennessee Walkers, but
it's just this particular subset.
It's when they're treated this way and they have done this to them. It really does hurt the horses eventually.
Yeah.
So I've wanted to keep that away from my business, but also I feel like any type of thing that you photograph, whether you do families or weddings or whatever, as a photographer, you sort of walk a fine line of what you allow and what you don't allow and what's reflected as being, part of you. I know there was controversy before about photographing Native American, without actually photographing a Native American person.
Right.
And that sort
of
stuff.
Someone like me showed up in a headdress, that's not really good to do these days, the cultural appropriation that comes with it. And I think what happened was a lot of, because I remember that happening, and a lot of photographers really didn't know it was bad until all of a sudden they were doing it. And then the outcry against it came out. They're like, oh,
yeah,
we shouldn't be doing that these days, right?
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, as a photographer, you know, while you try to be up on all the social issues of the day and stuff like that, sometimes, you know, things just go by the wayside, right? And yeah, everything, no matter what industry or, you know, what niche you're in photography, right? I think there can be some pushback on something.
Yeah, well, we find it here in the, you know, I'm right outside of Washington, D.C., very, very government-focused community. Large, I mean, you know, millions and millions and millions of people. We find that what you do with the flag, you have to be very, very careful about what we do with the flag here, because there are certain flag rules. There is actually flag rules of what you can do and what you shouldn't be doing with a flag. And unless you're up to speed with that, you can get into some big trouble, because you're not supposed to be wearing it as clothing. You're not supposed to be wearing it wrapped around your body when you're wearing a bikini. You're not supposed to be, you know, there's a certain level of respect. And some people honor that and some people don't. And some people say, well, everybody else does it. Everybody else has, you know, the flag on the t-shirt or whatever. What's the big problem? But when you're dealing with a community that is so incredibly government focused, and not necessarily, I don't want to say pro-government or anti-government, because that's not really what that argument is about. It's just showing respect for the flag. You can get into trouble, and you have to be careful about doing certain things. And I've done a lot of sessions with military personnel, for example, with newborns and that type of thing, where they've wanted to do something with the flag. And I've said, you know what, that really goes against the flag code. Do we still want to do that? And even sometimes military personnel are like, let me look that up real quick, because we probably shouldn't, especially if they're in uniform and then they want to do something. I'm like, yeah, I don't think that's good for your career. I don't think we should be doing that. I understand the vision, and I understand to you that's respectful, but for something else, it's not. And especially if you're going to be photographed in uniform, we don't want to mix those two things together. So it does take a certain amount of cultural understanding to know what's okay and what's not okay in certain circumstances. And sometimes we get caught unaware, which is unfortunate.
There's been a lot over the last few years of the flag controversies in different genres. I've seen like a newborn photographer who had a baby wrapped in a flag, and it was kind of along the lines of what you're talking about. It was a military family. And I mean, just the comments in the bottom.
People
controversy.
People get a little spicy. That's the way I like to say it. Those conversations get a little spicy. And I'm not one who likes spicy things in my inbox or in my social media comments. I like everything. It's my happy place. So let's just keep it my happy place. And so I don't usually go and do those types of things. Okay. Now, I mentioned this earlier, but I'm going to call you out on it again. So when we were talking earlier, you talked about the fact that you are an introvert. And I understand the fact of being like the extroverted introvert, where you can be really, really on and then you need a couple days off because you've just exerted so much energy and you need to refuel and everything. But you mentioned this in some of your notes, that you prefer animals to people, which is not unusual. A lot of people prefer animals to people. So when you're working, do you like the idea of having that human component, or would you be completely fine all day saying, hey, here's my horse, here's where I want it photographed, I'll see you in a half an hour, give me some beautiful images. Like, what's the ideal working situation for you when it comes to working with these animals?
Well, you know, it's a slight misconception that introverts don't want any people interaction, you know, because like I can be fine with a few people together, and that's not nearly as draining as like going to, like, you wouldn't. I love imaging, don't get me wrong, but you will never catch me at like one of the opening parties of imaging. Okay. Like that to me, it's just so overwhelming, and it's noisy and loud and chaotic, and I just can't do that kind of thing. But if I find 4 or 5 of my friends there, I will totally sit somewhere and hang out and chat with them with no problem, right? Yes. So for me, with the horses and everything, I mean, you don't tend to, like, photographing horses does not tend to be a solo pursuit unless you're like out in you know, photographing like wild Mustangs or something like that. I mean, if you want horses to be looking in a certain direction or doing a certain maneuver, you're going to have their owners there. I mean, it's also a safety thing as well.
Sure.
You know, so they're always around and everything. But I like working with the owners of my horses. I think they're a lot of fun. I mean, I work with a lot of like that high school to, you know, 20s age group that, I mean, they're just a blast to be around.
Yeah, they're fun.
They're like my kids' age, but they like hanging around me. So it's
it's totally different. That's the same thing like with my daughter's friends. My daughter says, oh, all my friends love you so much.
Exactly. They think I'm funny and they think it's, you know, fun to do projects with me and stuff like that.
But, I know.
You know, my kids are like, no thanks. Yeah, I don't want to do that.
I'm done with her. Okay. So I want to get back to this whole time management strategy thing, right? Okay. So we talked about that earlier. We got a little sidetracked about horses and, you know, time management, that kind of thing, which is great. But I want to come back to that specifically to your photography business. Can you give me one or two examples of things that you have put into place in your business that have really helped you from either a strategy standpoint of being able, you know, you talked earlier about having a big project that or a goal that you want to reach at the end of the year and being able to break that apart. I think a lot of people struggle with that of how do I break this apart? How do I break this down? So do you have a certain strategy that you follow or a certain ideology that helps you do that? If you're looking like, okay, I want to do this in 3 months' time, how do I chop this up into smaller pieces?
Okay. So yes, I do. and I can just tell you how I do it, but honestly, every person is going to do things differently because every person sort of learns differently or they visualize things differently. So like for me, I'm a visual learner. Mm-hmm. So if I can see it laid out, I can do it.
Okay.
So I use a very basic little program called Word.
What?
Yeah, seriously. In Word, there's something called Smart Art. And if you look at Smart Art, you can use it. It sets up things like hierarchies or flow charts and stuff like that. And so you can literally draw out like a flow of something like, or I do it as like for a goal, I do it as a hierarchy. Okay. And so my top thing is whatever my goal is. So let's say, for example, my goal was within 3 months to be on your podcast.
Okay.
That's the goal. Like, so that's my overall goal. Mm-hmm. So then I break it down into each month, what do I need to do in order to do that? Mm-hmm. So like the last month, I want to be on your podcast. Maybe 1 month I'm doing research about, you know, podcasts to be on, and maybe 1 month I'm doing what topics I should talk about, you know, like what do I think that I can offer you that you as a host would think is good and you would want to have me on there. Right. So then I just break it down from there. So if month one is doing research or something like that, then I break it down into, okay, what do I need to do each week? Well, this week I'm going to research branding, for example, or this region, you know, I'm going to draw out bullet points to make sure that I can talk about time management or whatever the case may be. I just take it and kind of structure it down. But by seeing it visually makes it so much easier for me to be able to tell what I need to do. And by the time you break it down to like weeks, you're literally telling yourself, okay, I need to spend 2 hours this week doing research on, you know, looking up what talking points I should talk about, for example. Well, that's not that hard to do if you're sitting in a parking lot waiting on a kid, or you're, you know, sitting in a doctor's office waiting on a kid, or you have an hour.
Right. You're at cheer practice waiting on your kid.
Waiting on a kid. You know, like there's a lot of time that we waste where we're waiting on a kid, or where we're doing something like, I have a podcast interview now, and an hour from now I have something else, but in between I've got an hour that I have to kill. You don't really want to start a big project, so you just slot in those little things there.
Little things. Yeah.
And visually looking at it is huge for me.
It's very helpful. So I, with my bigger projects, that big wall behind me, I will take those things down and I will color code things and I'll put it out on Post-its.
Yep. That works too.
And I like that. You can do this in Word too, but the flexibility, being able to move things around and all those types of things. I just like being able to do that. And I think the physicality of actually writing things out and putting them up there is what is very beneficial to me. I've seen people just, if you don't have a full wall, do it on a table, do it on the floor, do it in Word, do it in Trello,
do it on a poster board.
A poster board. You can, in Canva now, you can do flow charts. There's so many different tools that you have. If you need it on your phone so you have it wherever you go, you can do that. If you want it on your wall, you can do that. There's so many different ways of breaking these things down. So like for me, when it comes to like a new type of session that I want to do, I know already if I want to do a new type of session, I'm going to need to get images from that. I'm going to need to get artwork. I'm going to need to write my emails. I'm going to need to come out with a launch date. Like there's all those little tasks within the big task itself. So once you start breaking all those things down, the first, second time, third time you do it, it can seem kind of challenging. For example, I have a flow with this podcast that every podcast gets a blog post. The blog post has embedded it, the recording of the podcast itself, a little verb, little word about it, so people would be enticed to listen to it. If I have a giveaway or a download that goes along with the podcast, because I do a lot of teaching podcasts, the form's there for people to download it right away. Everything is right there, but it took me a while to figure out, okay, artwork, form, podcast, blog post, like to put all these things together in a way that actually has a flow. So if the first time you do it, it feels weird or it feels hard or challenging. Hard, I use, I'm sorry, nobody can see me, quotes, hard, right? Air quotes, hard. Because these tasks in and of themselves are not hard.
Right.
They're not physically difficult. Now, they might be mentally challenging, but you can do it. And the more you break it down, the better it can be. So finding a way to visualize it, I love that idea because I do that too. The whole visualization and the physicality of it.
Visualizing is really important because you mentioned where there's different tools online that you can do this on. Like I use Word to do it, or you can use Canva or whatever.
Sure.
Or you could do it actually in person, right? So where you're sticking it up on a post-it note on a wall or whatever. And it depends on the type of person you are. Some people need to be able to touch that stuff. Some people need to be able to look at it on their phone at all times. You know, some people need it to be directly behind their head. So, you know, it's right over their computer and they see it every time they move, you know? And I think it's important that a person knows what helps them, you know, and understands what products actually work for them. So, you know, a lot of times people will ask me, you know, how do you do things? And I'm like, well, listen, this is how I do it. But you know what I do doesn't necessarily work for everyone. So you have to know a little bit about yourself. Like online to-do lists for me do not work. I cannot use them. I have a legal pad sitting right next to my desk and it's literally like four pages long and I'm scratching stuff off, but I have to actually write it down. And believe me when I tell you, I have written things down on that list just to scratch them off. Okay. You know,
there's something very satisfying about that. Scratching it off. I keep digital to-do lists. And also I think we're talking a little bit generationally too. My daughter and our teenagers, if I mention that she do something that is not on a phone like this, she doesn't. I'm like, write it out. She doesn't see the benefit of writing down like her assignments, like put them in this document. What is due? What is coming up next? And I finally had to explain to her, she's like, I just do that on my phone. I said, honey, the phone's great, but not for everything. And just like when I had to explain this, and of course she thinks we were raised by dinosaurs because I'm like, listen, we didn't have phones. And she's like, okay, so how did you do all this? Well, first of all, some things weren't available to us. We weren't snapping. We weren't, you know, doing all that kind of stuff with social media because that didn't exist. But when it came to assignments, we had to listen to our teacher to find out what things we needed to do by when. And she's like, they just didn't put it in Schoology? No, Schoology didn't exist, right? So, but I'm like having it all written out in one place so that you can see it as a whole. And you can see, okay, on Tuesday I have this due, and on Wednesday I have this due, and on Friday I have this due, can really be helpful. But some of those things are lost on this newer generation. And I hate to come in and sound like I'm old, but I do know that there are some things that I've carried over that have been helpful that would help her as well. So if something doesn't work the first time, maybe try it one more time, but if it really feels just like against your nature, try doing it another way. We have so many different ways of plotting these things out and plotting our goals out, that you don't have to feel locked into doing it a certain way.
Absolutely. I mean, there is a method to everyone's madness mm-hmm. out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, no matter what your vibe is, there is a way to do it. And, you know, I look at my three kids, they all do things differently, mm-hmm. even though they're all in the digital space. Yeah. You know, like I have one who uses the calendar, like, and sets mm-hmm. everything up on the calendar.
Right.
And he knows when he has to study for stuff. He does that. I have one who sets alarms. Yeah. Like, literally, he has an alarm that says, go do this. Mm-hmm. Like, go do this. And, you know, like, as long as he has those alarms, he's great. And it yeah. works fine for him, you know. And then I have one who's much more hit and miss about all of that, but still learning. Like, hopefully she will get there.
She'll be okay. I'm still learning, too. She'll be fine. She'll be fine. Some of us never fully, like, get that whole organized, like we just don't yeah. have that gene. But she probably is more of a bigger thinker.
She's very much a creative, artist-y yeah. type mm-hmm. thinker. It's real interesting because I look at my kids and I'm like, one of them is a mini me. Mm-hmm. One of them is absolutely like the exact opposite of me. And mm-hmm. then one of them's right in the middle.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, genetics, weird.
Yeah, that's weird. Well, I don't want to keep you too much longer because I've enjoyed this conversation so much. But I want to, before we leave today, how can people find you? Where are you on socials? What's your website? Give us all those details.
You can find me on my website, which is ridetheskyequine.com. Mm-hmm. And you can find me on Facebook and Instagram, which is also both Ride the Sky Equine.
Ride the Sky Equine. Great. Yeah, definitely go check out that work because it's lovely. Betsy, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate your time. We have covered a lot of different topics, especially thank you to Enphoto for sponsoring this podcast. And we will see you next week. And now let's listen to a word from our sponsor at Enphoto. In a world full of keepsakes, your client's photo book is a treasure chest of memories. From the classic of Enphoto's Photo Book Pro to the accessibility of the Photo Book Basic, Enphoto has a canvas for every client's story. Each book is handcrafted with care and ready to be personalized to their heart's content. No matter what book you choose for your client, watch as your artwork weaves the story that is uniquely theirs. And with Enphoto's range of photo books, their story is in your hands. Now don't miss getting the best sample discount in the industry. If you head over to focalpointspodcast.com, you can get a 75% off sample of one of these Enphoto books, which is incredible. I promise you, if you order one of these, you absolutely won't be disappointed. Thank you for listening. This has been Focal Points, an Enphoto podcast hosted by Dori Howell. We hope you've enjoyed the show and we will see you next time.